Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam, Bucharest, Welcome to this latest edition of Network Europe. I'm Kate Hessan. In tune with the current holiday mood in Europe, this week's program focuses on music. We go to Glasgow to look at why this foggy and grey working class city is such a breeding ground for successful musicians. We visit a music festival in Brittany, where French bands win the hearts of the audience by resisting the trend to sing in English. And we head down to Belgrade to check out the pumping nightlife on the hundreds of party boats that line the city's rivers. Why does it always rain on me? Even when the sun is shining, I can't avoid the lightning. That's the song Why Does It Always Rain on Me by the popular Scottish rock band Travis. They're from Glasgow, and they're not the only Glaswegian band to have hit the big time. Over the past couple of decades, Glasgow has produced an incredible number of critically acclaimed and commercially successful rock bands. Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby visits Scotland's biggest city to find out why.
Orange Juice, Texas, The Jesus and Mary Chain, Travis, Primal Scream, Teenage Fan Club, Franz Ferdinand, Belle and Sebastian. Just some of the many bands from Glasgow who've made a big impact on the international music scene. How has this old working class port city produced so many great bands? Some key figures on Glasgow's music scene offer a number of different reasons.
My name is Douglas T. Stewart, and for 21 years I've been the leader of a group called BMX Bandits. I think it's because if you come from a very well-off area and a very comfortable area, you don't have the same need to escape. And not just a physical escape, but actually an escape in your mind from your surroundings. And I think places like Glasgow, Liverpool, Manchester are all conducive to producing bands because people find they want to get their hair brushed in their bedroom and pretend they're in a band as just a method of escaping from the reality of being alive in these places.
I play in a group called Teenage Fan Club, and my name's Gerard Love. I think most ports usually have good groups, maybe because it's a better mix of culture and stuff, and Glasgow always was quite accepting of people from different areas, so I think maybe there's a good cultural mix in Glasgow.
My name's Alan Woodward from Chemical Underground. I think a big part of Glasgow is that there's a real indoors thing in Glasgow. It's a really crappy weather a lot of time. It can be very, very wet. It's people spend a lot of time in their houses, so they listen to a lot of music, I think.
Another reason for Glasgow's vibrant music scene is the city's art school. Members of Belle and Sebastian, Travis and Franz Ferdinand have all studied there. Douglas Stewart again.
I think the art school definitely, in a lot of cities, plays a sort of part in the musical community. And the art school at one time was another place that definitely was a focus for a lot. It was a place where a lot of the musicians would go and dance and hang out. And I guess a lot of people who are inclined to be creative find themselves at art school. It's not necessarily they want to be painters, they're just creative people.
Franz Ferdinand played their first ever concert at Glasgow Art School. But it's just one of many places upcoming bands can learn their trade, says Alan Woodward of Chemical Underground Records.
Venue-wise, I think Glasgow's brilliant. I think that's one of its key strengths. There's places where you can play in front of 30 people and it seems busy. And for a young band, that's really important, that they actually start to feel confident and you can play right up to, you know, like a stadiums or, you know, big 3,000-4,000 capacity venues.
In a small scene where everybody knows everybody else, the success of one group can inspire others to get up on stage and have a go as well. Here's Francis MacDonald, who drums with Teenage Fan Club and runs the respected Shoeshine record label.
Violent Teenage Fan Club influenced a lot of people because he was a band from Glasgow, the suburbs of Glasgow, and they were playing to big audiences and bigger audiences, and it was very exciting to see. And I think that inspired people like Stuart Murdoch before he formed Bill and Sebastian. And the wheel keeps turning. I think they're inspired by each other's successes, and the new wave keeps coming through.
The multi-million selling success of groups like Franz Ferdinand and Travis in recent years has brought more attention to the city from the London-based major record labels. But as its music scene has grown in success and confidence, Glasgow has also developed its own music business infrastructure, with local independent labels and management and video companies. And local musicians believe the distance and difference from London can only be a good thing. Douglas Stewart.
Glasgow definitely has quite a different attitude than the musical community in London as I know it. And I think, for me, I think it's been a positive thing. I think because it's a much smaller town and it is so separated, there is a real kind of community spirit where people don't get jealous of each other so much when they have others have success. They actually see it as being almost a kind of point for their side. If someone like Teenage Fan Club or Bell and Sebastian get on top of the pops or have a really big hit record, I think everybody's like, yes, we've won!
Radio Prague's Ian Willoughby there reporting on Glasgow's music scene. With English taking over as the international language of music, throughout Europe it can be difficult to avoid Scottish, English and American bands blaring out of the radio. But in France, the situation is slightly different. Bands singing in English face tough competition from French bands who opt to sing in their mother tongue. Radio France International's Nick Champeau went to the Route du Rock festival in Saint-Malo in Brittany to find out why singing in French is de rigueur.
Catherine singing a song here in which she is petrified because Marine Le Pen, the daughter of the convicted racist leader of the National Front, is following him all over Paris. On the last night of the three-day Route du Rock music rendezvous, the multi-skilled modern poet Catherine almost stole the show from Glasgow's Franz Ferdinand, the festival's headline act. At the VIP bar, your best bet if you want to meet people from the music industry, everyone said Catherine's success on stage makes perfect sense. Sylvain Taillez, artistic director at Barclay Records, a subdivision of Universal Music.
Louisata, on their first album, have sold like more over 2.5 million albums, so it's very important act. Noir Désir was 2 albums over a million, so it's quite important for the French business. I don't know any French band that sings in English that is a big act in France.
I'm Philippe Richard, I'm a journalist for the newspaper West France, and knowing quite a lot about music. The difference between English and French music is that perhaps in French, lyrics came first and melody or music came after. A lot of people are very interested in what singers say. It's not just only the music. Even if it's a love song, they want to know what it means.
The commercial success of politically involved Noir Désir has inspired many other artists to sing in their mother tongue. For instance, Mio Sec or Dominique A. It also coincided with the introduction of quotas in the mid-90s. These have also helped. Radio stations were obliged to air at least 40% of music with French lyrics. But the French language, from a strictly musical perspective, can be quite a challenge. Helena Nogueira knows. She sings in Portuguese, English and French.
I think the French is more rude. It's less musical, more raw. In English, they have more U and O and E. This is nice. Et les Français sont comme ça, c'est très comme ça, très dur.
C'est belge.
Une valse à trois temps, qui sont encore le temps, qui sont encore le temps, sont bien des détours du côté de l'amour, comme des charmants, une valse à quatre temps.
Jean-Noël, or Gainsbourg, for the pop music, was some legends that are big, big influence. Jacques Brel, Gainsbourg, and, but you know, even the influence of Brel was very important for Noir Désir, for rock music, but very important for Scott Walker and for David Bowie. And today, for example, a guy like Bachung is very big influence for the French contemporary music too.
The problem is that apart from Japan, French bands singing in their mother tongue have difficulties exporting their music. Mind you, there's a new festival in London.
Hi, my name is Caroline. I'm 27 and I run a music festival called the French Disconnection, aiming to celebrate innovation and inventiveness in French music. Both, we're trying to bring nouveau bands, but we're also hoping to celebrate classic artists as well as brand new up-and-coming ones on the scene.
And the good news for English-speaking music lovers is that singer Catherine says there is no need to know thousands of words to write a hit.
L'écriture est illimitée. Mais en même temps, on découvre que plus il y a de limites, plus c'est illimité.
The more limits there are, the more infinite possibilities are. So 1,500 words are enough, Catherine says.
Dans les 1,000 ou 1,500.
And for those who can't be bothered learning all these words, here's an almost wordless song Catherine wrote with almost nothing but figures. It's his social security number, actually, and thanks to Catherine's savoir-faire, it has the melancholy of a love song. Saint-Malo, Nick Champeau, RFI.
Over on the other side of Europe, Romania's capital, Bucharest, is home to a small but vibrant underground music scene. And yes, most of them sing in Romanian. Many of the musicians involved in the underground scene grew up in the suburbs, and their lyrics tend to reflect their experiences of social inequality. Radio Romania International's Cristina Tiberian takes a look at the country's alternative music scenes. Yeah. Dimineața mă trezesc, nu pot să zâmbesc. Într-o oglindă veche soartă în care mă privesc. Totuși e gost, stau pe pat, afară e norat, detest. Tot ce am în jur sunt încordat, viața e un test.
Underground music is a relatively new phenomenon in Romania. It emerged in the late 1990s and has become increasingly popular, not only with the socially underprivileged, but with people from many different walks of life. This is because much of the music critiques the harsh reality of everyday life in Romania. I wake up in the morning, I can't smile in my broken mirror. Everything is dirty. I crawl through life, counting the days. These are just the opening lyrics of a song about the deprivation and misery that many of the capital city's underprivileged have to live with every day. The band, Paraziti, along with others such as Luna Amară, Bita, Anonim, Kagula, are just some of the flag bearers of Romanian underground music. These bands and their fans see themselves as different from the trendies in the city centre, as Liviu Kelcea, who's an expert in urban sociology and director of the Centre for Cultural Research, explains.
After 1990, we have witnessed the emergence of a so-called local identity. For many young people, life, their social horizon, is limited to the suburbs, the neighborhood they were born in. They don't need to go downtown for a drink and view those who do as snobs. Their neighborhood can offer them everything. It is a microclimate with its own life and culture.
Band Luna Amara, or Bitter Moon in English. They're one of the most popular bands in the underground Romanian music scene. Their music is a combination of rock, punk and grunge, with lyrics that speak about inequality, lack of opportunities for certain social categories, as well as about political issues. Luna Amara are famous for their non-conformist, direct style, which has caused the band to be censored on several occasions. Their lead singer, 27-year-old Mihnea Blidariu, isn't just a musician. He has a degree in Romanian ethnology and folklore and has just passed the entrance exam for the Faculty of Political Science in Bucharest. Blidariu sees his music as a type of protest and believes it can help change the way people think.
Your life experience has to revolve around the verb to care. People should stop thinking only of themselves and start caring about the rest of the community, because their actions always have repercussions within society as a whole. So if at some point you'll see huge crowds at our concerts, it will not mean that Luna Amara have softened their tone, but that the young generation has evolved and has finally understood our social message.
But then there are those who argue that using music as a form of protest is no excuse for poor quality music and foul language. One of these is Horia Moculescu, a well-known Romanian composer, pianist and talk show host.
Today, the so-called phenomenon of protest music is hardly any music at all. These people use musical patterns on top of which they put swear words for the sake of being cheered by 50 world-weary young people hanging around at street corners.
Back inside my nest. It's not my day today, it's obvious, I don't belong.
English DJ and music journalist Tom Wilson has been living in Romania for several years and knows the music scene inside out. He sees the existence of underground music as a sign of a healthy Romanian music scene and says that it's just a matter of time before underground music becomes an accepted and even celebrated part of the country's urban culture.
There is always a time lag between something appearing and then something becoming accepted. A lot of people today, especially from an older generation, would listen to Paraziti and they would cover their ears and say, this isn't music. And I think that is the most juvenile response that you can have for a new piece of music. I think that's something that's happened throughout history. If you look at the Beatles had the Church of England coming out against them. They said, this is decadent, disgusting music. Now you can go to the Royal Albert Hall and hear Paul McCartney's songs, John Lennon's songs, orchestrated by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra.
Tom Wilson says this shows the shift that has taken place in the course of the last 20 to 30 years.
Something starts off underground protest music and then it becomes absorbed into the establishment. I would like to think that in 30 years' time people will be doing orchestral arrangements of Luna Amara. It sounds ridiculous now, but it could happen.
That's an interesting thought. Just imagine what the Romanian Philharmonic could do with this. But that might defeat the purpose of this fascinating, thriving musical scene that protests against social inequality, poverty and political corruption in the Romanian society. From Bucharest, I am Cristina Tiberian, Radio Romania International.
While Romanians can still catch a concert of most of their favourite underground bands in their own country, Belarusian rock fans aren't quite so lucky. Belarus's authoritarian president, Alexander Lukashenko, is vehemently anti-rock music and has banned many local acts. But fortunately for Belarusian fans, neighbouring Poland stages an annual music festival showcasing many of the forbidden bands. Dmitry Hornevich from Radio Polonia checks out the latest in Belarusian rock at the Basovica Music Festival.
The name Basovica was coined in 1989 from the abbreviation containing the first letters of the organizer, the Belarusian Association of Students, which gathers young Belarusians born in Poland. Over its 17-year history, the festival has been invariably held near the little village of Haradok in the Podlaskie province, along the eastern borders of Poland, the home of the most numerous Belarusian minority groups living here. This summer, the festival attracted several thousand people, most of them from Belarus. In Belarus, such a festival cannot take place because the authorities consider rock bands dangerous enemies, carrying messages of freedom and support for the Belarusian identity. Quite unimaginably for many Europeans, in the country governed by the controversial president Alexander Lukashenko, the native culture of the nation, as well as the Belarusian language, are being pushed to the margin and replaced by Russian as in the Soviet days. Rock music defends Belarusian values, which is why it's so unwelcome for the Belarusian authorities. Volha, a student from one of the Minsk universities, who came to Basovichtya for the first time this year, says she cannot imagine such an event in her homeland. She is particularly glad to see so many Belarusian national flags which are banned back home. She says it's the first time for her to see so many people holding Belarusian flags and nobody ends up in jail for what in Belarus is a bold act.
It's great. It feels good and positive. It's just amazing. I've never seen such a huge festival, and it's just impossible to imagine that an event like this could happen in Belarus. There is no opportunity in my country to hear so much Belarusian music all in one place.
This year, around 20 bands from Belarus took part in the concerts, and six of them fought for the main prize. 40 hours of recording in one of the Polish studios plus a cash prize. Basovichtya is the first big stage for young bands, but it actually makes them popular. After performing here, they can record albums, play concerts and give out autographs. This was the case with a young band called BN. Its members come from a small town of Biaroza in western Belarus. They debuted in Basovichtya in 2003. Today they have recorded two albums and played at major rock festivals, winning recognition among young Belarusians. During this summer, BN presented songs from their new album called Long Live Rock and Roll. The band called Tavarish Mauser, hardly known in Belarus 2 years ago, except perhaps for the garage where they made their music, now makes a star performance at Basovichtya. The band's guitarist talks about their path to popularity at the situation of rock music in Belarus.
Basovichtya is a way for bands to gain a name. A young band must work to earn a name for itself. Once the band has achieved something, then it is the name that works for the band. I would say that Basovichtya works to give musicians a name. Belarusian rock has always been hard to swallow for the government because it has always been and still is the music of rebellion.
Basovichtya attracts Belarusians not just from Belarus, but from many corners of Europe, where they study, work or live in exile after breaking free from President Lukashenko's regime. Lyudmila, now a student in Warsaw, was expelled from Minsk University at the beginning of this year, when she was about to complete her fourth year of studies. The reason was that she had participated in demonstrations during the presidential elections.
We hitchhiked all the way from Warsaw and came at night. This place is great. I'm not thirsty, hungry or sleepy, because this place bursts with an atmosphere of student life and good mood.
Bands played their concerts for 2 nights until 4 a.m., the audience truly raved about Ethno Trio Troitsa, which performs authentic Belarusian pre-Christian folklore. As it happens, Troitsa is better known in Western Europe. Out of the 150 concerts they play annually, only 2 are organized in their home country. In Belarus, the Belarusian bands can sell their records, but it doesn't mean they can hope for change soon. Freedom of expression in Belarus is non-existent, and it's likely to stay that way for a long time to come.
Буян вечер завивает за
Radio Polonia's Dmitry Hornewicz reporting from Poland. For many musicians, file sharing is a contentious issue. Some support the practice, arguing that it's one of the only ways for alternative bands to become known in a market often saturated with big names from the US and the UK. Other musicians condemn the practice, arguing that file sharing is causing record sales to plummet. In Sweden, the issue has even caused the formation of a political party, the Pirate Party, which started up after Swedish police closed down one of the world's biggest file sharing sites, the Pirate Bay, has candidates standing in Sweden's September elections. Tom McCallenden from Radio Sweden has the details. Hey, Mr. Record Man, your system can't compete. It's the new
artist model, file transfer. A few months may have passed since police officers seized computers and shut down the Sweden-based Pirate Bay website, but the issue of free file sharing hasn't gone away. The Pirate Party, which was set up to promote the practice, now has more than 7,700 members, almost 500 more than Sweden's Green Party. Rickard Foltvinger is the head of the Pirate Party. He explains why they think so strongly that downloading copyrighted material to be played on PCs, DVDs and MP3 players isn't a problem.
You have three actors in culture. You have the artist, you have the distributor, and you have the fan, the consumer, if you like. And current copyright laws are completely biased towards the distributor, which, by and large, isn't needed anymore. What the distributor does today is to move digital information from the artist to the fan. With the advent of the internet, this step doesn't add value anymore because the artists can do that themselves and the fans can do that themselves. So in a functioning market, this step in the chain is going to disappear. So what these people have done is to legislate against their own demise. They have criminalized people who are not buying a service that doesn't add value anymore.
And it seems thousands of young Swedes agree with him. Almost all of the Pirate Party's members are male, and the majority are between 18 and 26 years old. Proof, the party says, that younger people are interested in politics if politicians simply knew what issues they wanted to talk about. People connected to the Pirate Bay website say since the police raids, the file-sharing sites only become more popular too. We asked people on the streets of Stockholm what they think to illegal downloading.
I think it's actually good for the Swedish economy if we could let all this free, because Sweden is leading the broadband development in the world. So this is a big business opportunity for Sweden to take advantage of this.
I think it's kind of okay. I mean, it's okay because you can do it easily, but it's not okay if you think about producers of those films.
It's free, and if a record costs 200 crowns, I'm not paying.
Everyone I know does it, but it doesn't mean to say it's right. It's common practice, and I think it's because the record companies have been so slow, and they have to get a grip. They should make it cheap, easy. It's still too expensive. Download this song.
Download this song. Chairman of the Swedish branch of the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry, Ludvig Werner, is not a happy man.
Well, I think it's the main big reason for the downfall in Swedish music sales during the last 3 to 5 years. So it's a very big problem.
It only became illegal for Swedes to download copyrighted material in July last year. And Ludvig Werner says the authorities need to take the problem more seriously.
Well, I think the law is not useless, but I think the political will to use it is one of the main problems. And I think that politicians in Sweden has, although they've actually ratified this new copyright directive when it comes to copyright, they haven't really, in a clear enough way, supported the new law and actually made resources available to enforce it.
Some of the 114 Swedish artists that signed a letter last year asking their fans to stop downloading their music illegally off the internet. But it clearly hasn't had that much of an effect on many internet users. This 25-year-old Swede was given a warning for his downloading.
Well, actually, I got two letters. They were from Telia, my internet provider, yes. And according to them, the anti-pirate agency in Sweden had discovered that I had been file sharing, copyright protected films and PC games. I was supposed to consider myself warned, and if I wouldn't stop, they would report it to the police. I guess I felt a little bit threatened, you know, I got a little nervous, to be honest, and for a long time I just stopped completely to download. And but now I have a different internet provider, so every once in a while I download a couple of songs.
Music was a product, now it is a service. Major record labels, why are you trying to hurt us? Fix it up in my face like,
don't steal our songs, Lars.
Well, Sony says the burners that are burning CDRs.
Despite falling CD sales in Sweden, Rickard Foltvinger from the Pirate Party says he doesn't believe that artists are losing out because of file sharing.
What reports are saying is that file sharing works basically as advertising for the records, just like radio does. It doesn't help the old music industry, but it helps the artists.
Recently, a new organisation called the Pro-Piracy Lobby has been set up by several groups across Europe to help start new file-sharing sites. Meanwhile, the police investigation into the Pirate Bay's activities continues, and it could lead to a court case next year. But according to the site's supporters, it's all just like a fantastic free advertising campaign, and they don't seem worried about the prospect of free music and films on the internet being stopped anytime soon.
Radio Sweden's Tom McCallenden with that report. And now we move from the north of Europe all the way down to the summery south, to Belgrade. Night has just fallen on the Serbian capital, and the whole city is getting ready to go out and party. In the summertime, the nightlife takes place outdoors. Many clubs close down their bars and cellars in the town centre and move to floating rafts on the banks of the Danube and Sava rivers. Hundreds of rafts line the imposing confluence of the two rivers and offer everything from gypsy music to electronic beats, grunge and turbo folk, a sort of Serbian ethno-pop. Deutsche Welle's Barbara Gruber takes us boat hopping and samples the different music genres.
It takes a little getting used to Belgrade's nightlife. Nothing starts before midnight and the party rarely ends before dawn. Go to lots of places in one night, people come and go, and arrangements are loose. David has lived and worked in Belgrade for many years.
It's 24 hours, and it's not like there's one predominant style. You can do turbo, you can do sort of grungy punk things, you can do quite sophisticated place. There's just everything here, there's tremendous variety.
I kick off the night on the floating nightclub called Plastic Jam. It's known for its electro, house and techno, says Danielle, who works for N-Music, a booking and events agency in Belgrade.
This is the first season of Summer Plastic, and we have some of the most popular DJs in Belgrade who are residents here. And we are also doing a lot of live acts with groups, local groups.
Today the band's called The Unexpected Force. With a minimalist wooden design, the stylish long bar, the young people sipping cocktails and grooving to the beats, we could very much be in New York, Paris or London. But even though we're getting to sample some of Belgrade's renowned electro music scene here, music is so loud, having a conversation without shouting is impossible, and I decide to move on. Shortly before 3 in the morning, the night is well underway. The next boat is smaller, but packed with young people dancing under the clear summer sky. I wonder how people manage to sustain such a social life, 7 days a week. Darko, a UN worker in Belgrade, tells me working 2 to 3 part-time jobs is not unusual.
We've been going on through a very rough times, I mean, for the past 10, 15 years. So I think it's some sort of like a filter for many people to try to party and forget about the past and live in the present. I think there is also this sort of like culture of people enjoying the life and not really working very much.
And while many of the floating nightclubs play music you would hear anywhere in the world, some people think it's difficult to have a good party without Serbian folk, or turbo folk, the distinctly Serbian mixture of sentimental lyrics, disco beats and oriental influence. Blaywatch is the place happening tonight. Past two bouncers and three scantily dressed hostesses, one enters a huge open-air dance floor. Blondes wearing miniskirts and plunging necklines are sipping champagne with their sleek boyfriends at VIP tables surrounding the crammed dance floor. Fake leopard skin, gold jewelry and heavy makeup seem to be mandatory here. I'm introduced to Jay, a small, bouncy, energetic gypsy. He's a turbo folk star, I'm told. Or at least, he used to be one in the 1990s. Nowadays, he might not attract 30,000 people to his gigs anymore, but his impromptu performances on board Blaywatch are legendary. I ask him what has changed since the fall of Milosevic back in 2000.
I think that basically nothing has changed. We lived like this under Milosevic, and we continue living like this without Milosevic. People in Serbia just like music. They'll give their last money for music. That's how we live. That's how we are.
32-year-old Bane, a former DJ and self-proclaimed music expert, is a bit more nuanced. Turbo folk really took off in the 1990s, he tells me, in the heydays of the Milosevic regime, and has long been the soundtrack of Serbian nationalism. Today, this has somewhat changed.
Ideology was behind turbo folk in the 1990s. It was more than just music. People would associate it with crime, nationalism, and power. Nowadays, however, although being popular, it doesn't carry this ideology any longer, although it will probably never completely lose it.
By 5 a.m. in the morning, my stamina is beginning to wane. Jay has promised that he will sing a few songs for me on stage, but turbo folk is starting to ring in my ears. And as I walk past Belgrade's party flotilla, I wonder how all these people will feel at work today, and if the winter parties in Belgrade's smoky cellars are as wild as summer nights on the Danube. Barbara Gruber, Deutsche Welle Radio, Belgrade. Hey!
That's it for the program today, but before we go, here's a chance for you to participate in Network Europe's quiz. That song, Grüß Gott Trauer, might be in German, but the band more usually sing in Serbian, and one of the band members is a well-known Bosnian Serb filmmaker, whose films include The Time of the Gypsies, Underground, and Black Cat, White Cat, an outrageous farcical comedy set in a gypsy settlement on the banks of the Danube. We want to know the name of this filmmaker and musician. If you know the answer, then send an email to us at contact@networkeurope.org. And while you're emailing, you can also tell us what you think of the program and where you heard of it. The email address again, that's contact@networkeurope.org, or visit our website at networkeurope.org. We always love to hear from you. Network Europe receives funding from the European Union and is a partnership of Radio France International, Radio Sweden, Radio Polonia, Radio Netherlands, Radio Romania International, Slovak Radio, Radio Prague, Radio Slovenia International, Radio Ukraine, and Deutsche Welle. On behalf of our pan-European team, I'm Kate Hairsine. Thanks for tuning in.
Und zwei Bier noch einmal. Kellner, bitte eine große in Ausländerball.